Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the author of a recently published scientific paper examining the likelihood of more earthquake events here in Oklahoma. Certainly, we're still experiencing earthquakes in the state on a regular basis, but the frequency and severity has been down in the last several years. Dr. Brett Carpenter of the University of Oklahoma's article in Nature Geosciences attempts to answer a question that many Oklahomans have been asking. Why has Oklahoma had so many earthquakes connected with hydraulic fracturing and water injection in our energy industry when other states who have experienced the same level of drilling haven't? According to Dr. Carpenter, it's how our basement is constructed. The lowest geologic layer here in the state, our basement was thought to be solid granite, but according to his research, that granite layer is actually full of fractures and faults. Brett Carpenter is an assistant professor of geology and geosciences at the University of Oklahoma and was a guest for the University of Tulsa's Earth Sciences Week, talking about his research and his paper, and I spoke with him while he was here. Dr. Carpenter, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rich.
You recently published a research paper in Nature Geosciences on the possibility of more earthquake events due to the way our lowest geologic layer in the state, Oklahoma, is constructed, our basement, so to speak. What makes our basement susceptible to seismic activity?
So in Oklahoma, roughly 1 to 3 kilometers deep, we have granite as our basement rock. It's really old, over a billion years old. This basement rock has fractures and faults in it from a billion years ago. And we looked at the orientation of these faults and their properties. And it turns out that in the current stress conditions in the crust in Oklahoma, they are very favorably oriented. So they're well oriented to fail. And then we found through lab experiments that if they do fail, they are prone to seismicity. So as opposed to kind of what we call creep events, where they just slide silently, they're more prone to have energetic earthquake-type events.
And when you say energetic earthquake-type events, are you talking about larger than what we typically see in Oklahoma in any given month, which is a lot of 2.0s, 1-point-something, maybe an occasional 3?
In terms of energy, I guess for energetic, I mostly mean they radiate energy in terms of an earthquake.
Okay.
It is a very tricky game to predict the maximum size of an earthquake expected, because that implies we know something about the fault length, and we don't know a lot about the fault lengths in Oklahoma. Now, there's certainly, we could expect earthquakes within the basement up to what we've had in the past, so magnitude 5 to 6. If you look statistically at how earthquakes happen, and we've done this in tectonic regions, we've kind of kicked the hornet's nest, if you will, in terms of the geology of the state, and so we could still expect some earthquakes, certainly some larger events. The way geology works is that geology evolves on geological timescales, not human timescales. So although we can get the ball rolling, it's going to take its time to evolve.
So we're talking about what we're doing now may have an impact 50, 100, a couple hundred years from now, or even longer?
I would say at least within the 50 to 100. We're still seeing aftershocks from some of the original sequences that occurred. If we were to have another larger event, that would have its own aftershock timeline. And here in Oklahoma, we're not at a tectonic plate boundary. We're not California, so we're not sitting on top of the San Andreas Fault. And so that means that the strain rate or the loading rate, so how quickly the plate moves here, is very, very slow. And that means that we have these very long, drawn-out processes that occur after an earthquake happens.
Hmm. Now, what is different about fracking and disposal wells are going on all across the country, and I assume it's now being exported all around the world in oil and energy extraction. What is special about Oklahoma that we've had so many more earthquakes than, say, some of these other regions?
This is a fantastic question and one that we're still trying to understand. We know, let's say, in Ohio that they're doing a lot of wastewater disposal and have induced earthquake problems, but not nearly to the level of Oklahoma, in Texas as well. One of the things that stands out most significantly is that in terms of disposed water, Oklahoma is at or near the top of the pack in the amount, or the volume of disposed water. The other part of the other issues as well is just that looking at the properties of the basement, like we said, it is, you know, we were injecting into the formation directly above it in terms of the stratigraphic column, and the basement is prone to seismicity. It has a lot of faults and fractures, and it's been thermally altered. If you go just northeast of here in the tri-state area, you can there's a reason that we're mining ores and stuff there because of all the hydrothermal alteration. Uh-huh. Well, this has happened to other areas in Oklahoma, maybe not economically significant, but it certainly makes faults and fractures that are ready to have an earthquake if they get a push.
Now, one of the things I was reading is we're discovering new faults because of this seismicity, faults we never knew existed.
Certainly. So Austin Holland and Steve Marsh put together the Oklahoma Fault Database, I believe, in 2013 or 14. But those were faults that were mapped at the surface or mapped in the sedimentary layers provided by industry data. Most of these earthquakes, as I mentioned, are happening below in the basement. And so we are now mapping faults from earthquakes. So faults that we did not know about until they started having earthquakes on them. And this has been a problem known in geology for years. In some of the areas in California, they worry about what they call a blind thrust fault, which is it's blind because you don't see it until it has an earthquake. We don't have thrust faults here. Ours are strike slip, but they were unknown to us until they started making noise with earthquakes.
So you might want to explain those terms. I assume a thrust fault is some pressure on the two plates coming together.
Yep. So a thrust fault is in a compressional environment, and it means that one side of the fault is pushed up over the other side. So it's a thrust or reverse
fault. This is because you have the meeting of the tectonic plates along California.
It can be the meeting of the tectonic plates, okay. But it can also be within plates.
Okay.
So.
Uh-huh. And what you're talking, this other type is?
Yeah, so these are pretty much vertical faults where one slide slides past another. In our parlance, we call that a strike slip fault.
I know the Pawnee earthquake, the big earthquake that happened in September a couple of years ago, this led to a discovery of a fault nobody knew about. It's, what do they call it, the Sooner Lake fault now?
We did not know the Sooner Lake fault. The other fault that was there that I think had some foreshocks on it and has continued to have some small events on it, we knew about that fault in the sediments, and now we know that it's there in the basement as well. But the Sooner Lake fault that had the 5.8, we did not know about before it had that event.
Now, it seems like our earthquake swarm that we saw that happened when we began the big energy extraction boom in the early part of the 2000s seems to have abated somewhat. We're still having a lot of small earthquakes, but it's not like it was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. Is there something we can attribute that to?
So lately we've seen the earthquake rate, and we look at some magnitude cutoff, let's say 2.5 or so per year. That has decreased dramatically since 2016, I believe. Part of that, and there was an article in the Tulsa World, it's due to two factors. The dominant factor is market forces. Oil prices are low, so we're producing less, and the really water-rich wells that were profitable at $100 a barrel aren't profitable at $55, so we're not producing them. So with production down, disposal is down. And so we're not pumping in nearly the volumes that we were back then. The other is forced to that OCC mitigation actions have worked. I do believe that we probably reduced the aftershock sequence in terms of some of the magnitude fours we would have expected after the Pawnee event due to, basically shutting off those injectors immediately following the event. Statistically, you would expect 10 magnitude 4 earthquakes after an event that size. I don't think we've had any. That's due to that we radically changed the stress conditions after the earthquake by stopping injection. But overall in the state, injection is significantly down because production is down. And because those two are down, earthquake activity has been down.
Now, was there something particular about the disposal wells that were shut down in the wake of the Pawnee earthquake? Was there something special about those particular injection wells? Were they injecting deeper?
Actually, no. Just that they were in the area, and part of the scary thing is that we don't know where these big faults are. So these injection wells get sited with the best available knowledge, but sometimes that knowledge doesn't include basement structure.
And so they were injecting at a site where there was a fault.
The Sooner Lake earthquake happened, uh-huh. And we know that there's no injection well that was like right near that fault or even the other fault that was close by. But we were injecting quite a bit in that broad area. And one of the things, too, were they were high-rate injections because it was producing the Mississippi lime in that particular formation. If you produce 10 barrels of fluid from the Mississippi lime, one barrel is oil, 9 barrels is water, roughly, is the ratio. We're not producing from that formation at the moment, or at least not a lot, because it's just not economical. Now, if oil prices get back up to 100 again, there's a lot of wells that have been shut in that might come back online. And so we don't know what will happen. We don't know if those will be opened up and produced. But if they are, that water, produced water, will have to go somewhere.
Yeah. One of the big questions is the volumes at which the water is disposed. Do we have a good sense? Is the regulatory structures set so we know how much water at what volume is going in?
So for the Arbuckle group, which is the thick formation sitting right on top of the basement, that is reported daily to the OCC, and we get pretty good granular data on that. It's not available daily, but every month or so, the OCC will put out the volumes for the wells in the area of interest. So we've gotten much better granularity on that. Some of the shallower formations are not regulated as strictly, and there are certainly some logistical issues to that. It is not easy to get that data and to collate it and make it available. Also, at this point, the Simpson Group, as I mentioned, we've not seen any, let's say, or there's been no carefully documented increase in seismicity due to Simpson Group injection. Part of that might be because we haven't looked yet, but part of it might be just maybe there's not seismicity involved with the shallower injection. Our work has shown that there are still structural connections from that group down to the basement, so we might be just changing the time.
So when you're saying this structural connection from these shallower formations down to the basement, this is what you're worried about, is that you might inject at a shallow level, but that wastewater is going immediately down to the basement and causing a potential of seismicity?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with injecting fluid, you don't actually need the fluid to move far, but you increase the pressure, and just like, let's say, if you had a water balloon and squeezed it, and so that pressure both puts stress on the rock, but it also transmits through the fluid if the fluid's connected. And so you can start injecting, and the pressure front will travel much faster than the fluid will actually move. So now, while there is some evidence, and there was a recent paper that suggests we should see a long-term deepening of earthquake events due to the density of some of the injected fluid, the pressure doesn't care. The pressure is going to, once it goes in, the pressure will spread much faster than the fluid moves. The presentation from the Oklahoma Geological Survey that I saw, that monitoring some wells where wells 5 to 10 kilometers apart, injector well was turned on at a monitoring well 5 to 10 kilometers away. Within 5 minutes, they saw the pressure increase. So certainly we weren't moving fluids 5 to 10 kilometers in 5 minutes. But that pressure front was noticeable. And now it doesn't have to be very big. We assume that all the faults, especially the correctly oriented faults, are at or near failure in the crust. And this has been shown throughout the history of looking at faults in the crust, that if you kind of think about it, that the weakest fault is always going to be the one that fails. That means all the other ones will be at or near their critical stress because the weakest one has failed. And so all it takes is a small change to have a fault that's, right at the precipice of failure. Just a little change will get that to pop off an earthquake.
My guest today is Dr. Brett Carpenter. He's an assistant professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Oklahoma. He recently published a research paper in Nature Geosciences on our lowest geologic layer in the state, our basement, and its susceptibility to seismic activity. He was a guest of the University of Tulsa's Earth Science Week, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Getting back to that idea that, you have a monitoring well and a disposal well 5 to 10 kilometers away, you start disposing fluids and you see the effect almost immediately. That means you could see seismic activity almost immediately as well, couldn't you?
You could.
Has that been the case at sometimes?
I would say at this point only in shallow well completions. So we try to be very careful in discriminating between wastewater disposal-related seismicity, and seismicity due to completing a well or hydrofracturing a well. So hydrofracturing a well, we tend to see shallower events, smaller magnitude, but much more tied in time to the well event. The deeper disposal seems to take a while, a little bit longer, due to the fact that the pressure has to move not only through this Arbuckle group, but then it has to move down into the basement to a certain depth, and that just takes time. So to my knowledge, we haven't seen very many wastewater disposal-related earthquakes that have happened in time immediately after, you know, a well has been turned on. The immediate seismicity to, let's say, well operations is reserved to the completion of wells. You can see that right now in Kingfisher County in the stack play, where we've seen some shallow seismicity due to well completions.
Yeah, and that's the earthquakes we've seen in the last couple of weeks, yeah?
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about your research. Was there a specific seismic event that you studied, or was this all about mapping the basement and lab work?
So I actually didn't feel the Pawnee earthquake. I was driving on our wonderful roads here in Oklahoma down to look at a large fault in southern Oklahoma called the Mears Fault, which historically has had a magnitude 7. So that's actually quite a big event. We were going down to look at that for some reason on a Saturday morning. And my research has been focused on basically, I tried to look, and we know everything about the oil producing rocks in the state for good reason, right? They're a huge part of our state economy. But we didn't know a lot about the rocks underneath that. And so I looked at that. I knew there were exposures near Milk Creek, Oklahoma. And so we began field mapping fractures and such.
And where is Milk Creek?
So Milk Creek is
down in the southwestern part.
Maybe an hour north of Tishomingo.
Okay.
If that's okay. A better location. And it's got beautiful out. There's a bunch of quarries there, so we could see fresh faces. But there was also this area that was just beautiful exposed granite. We started mapping it and noticing, in part of science is you make observations, and we made a whole bunch of observations and started noticing a pattern. We noticed that the pattern of fractures we were mapping seemed to have a similar pattern to the earthquake lineaments if you trace them in the state. And we're like, huh, this is interesting. These are the same rocks. Earthquakes are happening in these. They're just buried. And so then we collected a bunch of samples. So samples from cores, including from up here near Tulsa, and samples from outcrops, and then did lab experiments to determine. We can determine in the lab frictionally if a rock under a given set of conditions wants to kind of creep silently or wants to possibly have an earthquake. And so we combined our field work with the lab work, which I think is what makes the paper so strong. It was identifying the structures that would have the earthquakes or that were likely to fail, and saying that failure was likely going to be seismic in nature. So tying those two together was what really made that study quite strong.
Yeah. At this point, it sounds like this is an issue we need to be thinking about in the future, especially if oil prices rise again and we see increased volumes in waste disposal wells through fracking. Is our regulatory structure adequate today for what you're looking at as far as structure of the regulations regarding the basement?
So right now, specifically regarding the basement, the regulation is that there's just no injection into the basement.
Okay.
Which was not the case in the past in Oklahoma. There were wastewater disposal wells that went into the top of the basement. After the Prague event, those were all plugged back into the Arbuckle. So in terms of the basement, that's just a no-go zone in terms of direct wastewater injection. Right now, I'm certainly very happy with the data we get about Arbuckle injection and such, and where they're monitoring that. As a scientist, I would always like more. More information is better, helps me make. But I'm very cognizant to some of the logistical issues that the OCC faces. I am doing some work now trying to look at to see if there is any seismicity associated with these shallow wells. Basically, if we start finding some indication, then maybe my data is shared with the OCC when I need to. But then if we start to find a relationship between shallower injection and seismicity, then maybe regulation would need to be relooked at. In terms of the future, we have not changed the way that we dispose of wastewater in the state. Our primary way to do it is still injecting it back into subsurface aquifers. Right now, injection is down because production is down. But if oil prices crank back up again, I would expect production and thus injection or disposal to follow. So my gentle warning is that I don't think we're out of the woods yet. We are certainly in a nice lull now. I think 75% of that lull is due to market forces, 25% due to regulation. But if we start producing a whole bunch more again, I don't know what would happen. I do know that if, you know, that water, if we keep injecting it underground, as we will, without careful regulation, we certainly would expect more earthquakes. We've known in geology since the 1700s that if you inject water, if you increase the pore fluid pressure in a fault zone, you will make it fail. This is not a surprise to the geology side of things.
And it took the state a little bit of time to come to realize that.
It did. There was some pushback, and I'm very cognizant of that. Most of the state's economy is from some type of hydrocarbon production, and I'm aware of that. But it's the regulators and the state agency's job to find the balance between, you know, regulations to not have large damaging earthquakes and maximizing, you know, revenue from hydrocarbon production. My job is to do the basic science to give those bodies the best information possible.
What's been the reception of your study at a state level from like the Corporation Commission and the like?
So the Corporation Commission, they commented on the study to the fact that I did not share the study with them before publication. As a scientist, I don't feel compelled to do that. I've had discussions with them since, but they are in the science side of the Corporation Commission is always interested in getting more information. So just like as a scientist, my job is to do the basic research. They are interested in receiving that. And we've also had discussions about the Simpson Group injection, about trying to at least begin to see if there is an issue with Simpson Group injection before the OCC would go out and think about changing regulations or reporting requirements for the Simpson Group.
Well, is now your focus shifting from the basement to this upper layer of sedimentary rock, the Simpson?
So a lot of my focus still maintains in the basement. There's a lot of properties we still don't know about it. I've got a graduate student doing continued experiments on the basement. I've worked with another student where we're trying to document the alteration in the basement. For a while, various, we'll call them models, of seismicity in Oklahoma, where treating the basement is basically this nice, pristine, granitic, unfractured rock. And I think...
Solid as a rock, right?
Yeah. I think my study and then another one that was just submitted conclusively proves that's not the case. It's heavily fractured and heavily altered, so we have to be cognizant of that. In terms of shallower layers, the one thing about the Earth that makes it hard is that it is opaque, quite so.
How do we this is a question I had. How do we map the basement? It's, you know, it can be well down below all the sedimentary layers. Is there a way of getting at it?
So we've been mapping it with 3D seismic.
Okay.
That we've been able to get from industry donations or publicly available 3D seismic. And that allows us to map the major structures. If you think about a seismic wave, it has a resolution of something like 500 meters or more. So we're not seeing the small scale stuff. So we're using 3D seismic. I have a student right now that's actually looking at and mapping the number of faults that cut from the basement up into the shallower layers. I have a slide today actually in my talk where in an area of 701 square kilometers, mostly in Osage County, because that's where we have data, about 23% of the basement faults we've identified. So these are big structures that we can see cut up into the Simpson Group.
All the way up to the top then, almost to the top.
Well, the Simpson Group's still quite deep. So, but it is there. It cuts through the Arbuckle into the secondary injection layer. None of the faults that we've seen in Oklahoma that have big earthquakes have actually fractured up to the surface. The only one that's done that historically is the Mears in southern Oklahoma, where we go and map the scarp. But that's because it had a big 7. We think a magnitude 7 on it. We didn't have instruments back then. So I keep trying to look at basement properties, but also to try to put some quantitative numbers on the number of faults that we can see that cut up through. With a separate student, we are looking So the Oklahoma Petroleum Information Center of OGS is in Norman, and they've got a whole bunch of core. Most of it, all of it's been donated by industry. In some special cases, we have cores that go into the basement. There's a bunch of mineral exploration cores from northeast Oklahoma. So with another student, we've been mapping the fine scale structures and fractures in those cores. But we don't have a lot of material because most boreholes, well, of the hundreds of thousands of boreholes in Oklahoma, probably less than 0.01% go into the basement and actually return material for us to look at. Mm. So we're mapping what we can get and see. And then we use 3D seismic where we don't have a core.
Well, let me ask you one last question. This is probably when we talk about seismicity in the state and the fact that we're doing all this research, when you're talking about these fractures and faults down in the basement, you mentioned the Mears fault was capable of a 7, we think. Are there other faults that are capable of that sort of seismicity in the state as it exists now? You know, and we've had, what's the highest one?
5.8.
Are we looking at 6s and 7s possibility just due to the construct?
So that is a very tricky question to answer, in that the maximum earthquake size basically is some factors, but the length of the fault, because we assume that the thickness of the fault is about the same, right? Let's say we know it's going to be 10 kilometers or so, between 5 and 15 kilometers depth. So the length is then what controls it. Now, if you just look at Austin Holland's map, there are certainly some long structures that would be capable of producing a magnitude 7. But that would require the whole structure to rupture at once, and we've not seen that yet in any of the earthquakes in Oklahoma. The main shock, so we know that the Sooner Lake fault is actually quite long, but the main shock, we know it's quite long because of the aftershocks that happened on it. The main shock, that 5.8, only ruptured a part of the fault, which is, geologically speaking, much more likely. There are very few cases where you rupture the entire length of a fault all at once. So I'm not going to say it's impossible that we could have a magnitude 7. From the mapping of seismicity and the mapping of faults and fractures that we've seen, that kind of 5 to 6 neighborhood seems to be where we could expect, you know, the larger earthquakes. Certainly up to a 7 is possible. I'm not going to say that it's not. We've historically had a 7, or at least what we interpret as a 7 in the state. Part of it is we just don't know, and that's why the regulators get paid the big bucks to kind of deal with that issue, kind of take what we know and what we don't know and try to make it the best decision possible.
And meanwhile, you continue to research and get more information.
Yep.
All right. Well, Brett Carpenter, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Dr. Brett Carpenter is an assistant professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Oklahoma. His article, "The Susceptibility of Oklahoma's Basement to Seismic Reactivation," is in the September issue of Nature Geoscience. He was a guest of the University of Tulsa's Earth Science Week last week. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.